All right, everybody, welcome back to the Five Hole Taxi Squad presented by the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Team. We are back once again on November the 7th, 2023 for our Week 5 weekend preview, and with some other tasty topics. We will also discuss a little bit of reflection on Week 4 with some quick fare topics as well as hot guy check-in. So without further ado, Jay, start up the fares and let's get into it. Right, hello everybody and welcome back. Thank you for listening. As always, we are the Five Hole Taxi Squad. We are your hosts, Craig, Alan, and Jay. Welcome back to the pod, guys. How are we doing tonight?
We're doing. Sometimes you can ask for more than that.
Yeah, let's talk some
more. It's late. It's a late jump off for us, so we're going to try to hold it together for the people out there and the listeners heading into Week 5 weekend with some quick fare reflections on Week 4 and with Hawkeye check-ins in tonight's episode. So without further ado, why don't we jump into it and get to news and notes from around the league, and we'll start with some injury updates. As we all know, send a prayer up. My boy Jackie Hughes went hard into the boards a couple of nights ago. It looks like it's not as serious as first suspected, like a broken collarbone, but it is a shoulder injury and he is currently week to week. From a fantasy perspective, this hurts my soul, as he was just on fire to start the season, and it does elevate the likes of Dawson Mercer for some more opportunity in the top six and potentially on the power play. But he is also off to a very slow start to the year. I know he did score recently. Hopefully a fast recovery for Jack Hughes and we see him back real soon. Going to the Sunshine State, Florida Panthers fans and fantasy stalwarts like Allen, who have been holding the Brandon Montour and Aaron Ekblad, they are getting real close to their return and could be back as soon as the teams return from their California road trip. It's next week that they're in California for 3 games. It looks like Brandon Montour and Aaron Ekblad are scheduled to return to the team following next week's schedule, so going into Week 7. For those holding Oliver Ekman-Larsson, please enjoy him for the next 10 days and then kick him directly into the sun after that.
Oh, it's like those sad puppy commercials with the I Will Remember You song, man. I will value our time together.
It probably means a hit to, for those, if anybody had him in a deep league, Gustav Forsling's value as well, if they're both returning. I would imagine they're going to ease them both in from an ice time standpoint to make sure they're both healthy, especially Ekblad coming off another leg injury. They're probably going to want to make sure Montour's shoulder is 100% before he takes full reign on power play one. But, the scoring from Florida's standpoint hasn't probably been up to par for the organization to start the season. So I'm sure fantasy GMs and the real GM in Florida, as well as the Florida Panthers fans, are looking forward to both of them being interjected into the lineup in less than a week and a half. Freddie Anderson, Carolina Hurricanes goalie, is now out long term. He's dealing with blood clots. I don't know why this team just loves goalies and hoarding them like Allen in our listener league, but they brought in Yaroslav Halak on a PTO and then called up the kid from the minors.
I'm wondering if Halak is the minor league signing maybe, and they ride with Ranta and Kochekov. If I had to guess, I haven't heard any updates on if the Halak will actually turn into a signing or what.
I just found it very strange that they signed Halak first to a PTO and then called up Kochekov. That was very odd. I thought, having a treasure chest of goalie goodness, and, you know, having one of the lowest shots on goal rates in the league, do you really need another old goaltender when you already have two of them and now one of them's out long term? Not sure if Halak's ever really going to have any value. He's probably more of an insurance thing if Rantanen goes down.
Which,
and
he
there's
will.
Your fantasy. There's your fantasy nugget, because I've seen him scooped up everywhere. I grabbed him in a couple of spots. He's probably going to get 60% of the starts moving forward, unless the kid goes on another hot streak like he did last year and just like straight up steals the net from Rantanen. Or to Alan's point, Rantanen also has injury history. A couple other storylines from around the league that we've keeping our eye on, and I can't wait to talk about the second one because it's hilarious. But a minor one from a fantasy hockey standpoint, because the Calgary Flames are currently a dumpster fire. Andrew Mangiapane, the Italian bread man, if we want to call him that, was suspended for one game for cross-checking McCann. He cross-checked him directly in the neck, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't actually seen it, but I think I saw that on Twitter/X, that it was like a stick to the neck. McCann is not injured, luckily. I think that's why it's only a one-game suspension, and Mangiapane is not known for that aggressive play. So he'll be back soon. Mangiapane, Italian bread man. Calgary Flames are on fire.
Arrivederci.
Not on fire in a very bad way. They're not on fire in a good way. Like, they're just real bad. It's not good from a fantasy perspective for them. We might have to have like a full episode of Cab Confessionals on our take on the Flames and Huberto and Markstrom. Like, it's just not looking real good at all right now for the taxi squad on the Calgary Flames.
Is that where I turn to my better take on the 130 point Edmonton Oilers?
Well, we can probably talk about that, because our next storyline before we get into the week 5 weekend schedule is, I don't want to call them a dumpster fire because they have two of the best players on earth, if not the two best players on earth on this roster. But my God, what is happening in Edmonton? It is a disaster. Everybody thought the coach was going to get the axe first. But the hilarious thing is that they've made Jack Campbell fall on the sword edge first, and they've put him on waivers to, as of yesterday or this morning
he was put on waivers. He didn't even play last night. That's the worst thing. He got fired on his day off.
So Skinner got lit up last night and they lost again, and they put Campbell on waivers. Very confused by this move. I understand they sent Skinner down earlier in the season to figure it out, but Skinner's also been crap. And now Campbell's going back down again to figure it out like he did last year. I would imagine because of the cap hit, they're going to bring him back up again at some point. And I'm assuming they're hoping Skinner figures it out like he did last year and steals the net while Campbell's gone, because he's going to get all the starts. I really don't think this Picard kid is going to get anything. He's just there as insurance until Campbell says, hey, my noodle's fixed and I have confidence again. Somebody save me.
Make it so, number one.
This is exactly why Treliving did not give Samsonov any money. Don't give goalies money. Campbell just told all the goalies in the league, you're all screwed, other than if you're an elite level player like Hellebuck and Vasilevskiy. Nobody's getting anything with term or money anymore if you're like a B-level starter, thanks to Jack Campbell.
You say that, but someone will cave and give a goalie stupid money.
It's just like fantasy. We continue to put value on goalies in some capacity, and it just becomes a nightmarish endeavor. They do it in real life too. Just goalies are just the devil. I don't know what to call it. They're just a nightmare. But that's it from around the league. I think it's really, you know, it's going to be really funny to see what happens in Edmonton if they lose to the Sharks. So if Edmonton Oilers lose to the San Jose Sharks, who look like they can't even beat a really good AHL team right now, Woodcroft is going to get fired like instantaneously when that game ends. But I really don't know what else they're going to do, because like, where are they going to find actual goalie help if Skinner can't figure it out? I don't have an explanation to why they are really like, Alan, you and I were talking after that Vancouver game, right?
Or, yeah, dude, they just looked terrible. Like, and I'll get to that later. But no, Edmonton just looked fucking terrible. And like, one of those goals they got last night was a total kind of misplay by Demko of the puck behind the net that they could have challenged but decided not to.
And, like, don't get me wrong, the Canucks and Demko are on a whole other level right now, but, like, Edmonton's supposed to be arguably one of the top teams in the league, if not the West, and they look, they're the second last team in the NHL right now. And they look bad.
And I'm almost wondering if McDavid needed that second week to heal up, that he is not 100% or even 90%. But I would wager that 60 or 70% McDavid is better than a lot of people in the league at 100%.
I'm going to save Jay from the listeners coming at us. We're not going to talk bad about McJesus. He's going to be fine. I don't know if the Edmonton Oilers are going to be fine, but he's going to be fine. Draisaitl's probably going to be fine. Maybe you can go talk to some McDavid and Draisaitl owners and find a reasonable deal for the first time in a very long time for these individuals to acquire them if you want to, quote-unquote, say, buy low on the two best players on planet Earth. But, you know, you could go try your hand at getting those deals done probably right now before they somewhat return back to reality.
Like, Thursday's going to be eye-opening no matter what it is. Like, I can't believe I'm looking at the scores right now. San Jose, who has conceded 20 goals over two games, 10 goals in each game, somehow has a lead against the Flyers. Maybe all it took was 20 goals over two games to have the Sharks turn their season around. But if not, I think Edmonton should be absolutely smashing the Sharks. And if nothing short of, like, basically literally 10 goals, as evidenced by other two hockey teams, Edmonton should be able to do that, right? Like, comfortable 5-2 victory, something like that.
Yeah, but I even if that is the reality on Thursday night for them, you cannot say that that is a get right game. Like, no. It's not.
An exhibition match.
It's like, okay, everybody make sure you're healthy game and show off your skill set and then, you know, have a little fun. It's not going to be a, oh my God, the Edmonton Oilers are fixed because who they play on Saturday. So they may have a get right game in the Seattle Kraken if they can, you know, quote unquote, get off the schneid. But the Kraken are at least a more formidable defensive team than whatever you want to call San Jose. Like, I just, it's not good in Edmonton, and we'll leave it at that. You know, if you want to try your hand in your leagues with your McDavid and Draisaitl and Hyman and Nugent Hopkins owners and see what you can do from a fair deal, it might be the only time you have an opportunity to do so. But let's get into a little bit of the Week 5 weekend preview, starting with the schedule. So, Alan, take it away, and then why don't you start us off with the goalie streams that we wanted to look at for the weekend.
Few teams this time around that have the Friday-Sunday sweet spot. Anaheim, Florida, of course, Minnesota, and San Jose. Yuck. Teams that play Friday are Buffalo, Calgary, Carolina, Jersey, Philly, Toronto, Vegas, and Washington. And then the teams that play Sunday are Chicago, Columbus, Dallas, Montreal, New York Rangers, and Vancouver. And then a little spoiler alert, the Ducks have 4 games with 3 off nights next week. Probably the best schedule out there. So I will say grab either one of those guys. They're both under 50% owned, either Gibson or Dostal for next week. They're kind of running them tandem right now, especially now that Gibson is back. But the other guy I had, and I should listen to myself more often. Play him at your own risk, but Jake Allen, before tonight, in his last 4 starts, he had a 940 save percent and a 222 goals against and a 3-1 record. But
Allen, what happened tonight, man? What happened?
Oh, what happened? I should have known. My homer bias should have kicked in. It should have been like, no, Allen, save him.
Did he give up 5 goals in 2 periods? Is that what happened?
He gave up it might have 4 happened. Goals on 8 or 9 shots. It was not good. But again, should be available, but play him at your own risk. Maybe not against the Lightning team that just laid an egg against Toronto. But I guess D-Man, I'll hand it over to Jay there.
Oh, no, yeah. Like, I guess for certain streamer suggestions, this week is a really particularly good week. You got, how do we say his name? Minchikov?
Minty. He's Minty Fresh. Like
Minty Fresh.
He's a fresh mint. He's a tic-tac.
Honestly, it's not just him. It's a lot of the Ducks as well. Like, they are playing like a team possessed. Like, somebody must have, like...
Dude, they looked good against Vegas in that, handing them that first regulation
absolutely,
loss.
Absolutely. And I think probably the only motivation required was to show them their standings from last year or something. I don't know. Anyways, the team's great. Minchikov, like, he's 55% owned. Definitely Just Go Check territory. Guys who are probably not in Just Go Check territory, but most likely available. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, he's probably going to be fantasy irrelevant in about a week, but for this awesome Florida schedule, yeah, pick him up. He's only like 24% owned, so yeah, he's probably still available. D1 PP1 for the rest of the week, final swan song, heck yeah. Spurgeon seems like he's gonna come back from injury soon. Pick him up, snag him too. He's gotten PP1 time up in Minnesota as well. Well, right now it's Kalen Addison's PP1 kingdom.
Oh no, they've lost their mind. Five forward power play right now in Minnesota.
He is going to take the power play back when he comes back. Addison stinks and they're not going to run five
for more than on the power to play. All, and I mean all Addison owners in advance prior. I apologize for your pain. But you can join us in the drops and pick up instead a Super Mario Ferraro who we know nobody is going to own San Jose Sharks. We've clowned on them in the show, but Super Mario Ferraro kind of gets you everything else if you don't count or need goals, power play goals.
Or plus minus.
All the other stats.
He's hits and blocks. He's a specialist. Hits and blocks specialist, okay?
Also worth mentioning is that since Adam Fox, D1, PP1 on the Rangers is injured IR next few weeks. Gustafson, definitely worthwhile to get. He's been taking all that PP1 time, but Alan mentioned before we were talking in the show as well that the Rangers, they do play three games this week five, but the week six, the week afterwards, is the big one where they play one game. You might get Gustafson if you're really trying to win week five on Sunday. Drop him Monday. Like unless he makes me eat my words and scores like a double hat trick on his one game, he is unlikely to outperform any of the other extra players you could stream. You could probably even stream other players after dropping him and still add him back in time on the Saturday if you really believe in his double hat trick. But yeah, Gustafson and all of the Rangers for week six drops. They won't play the game. I guess I'll throw it back to Craig for forward streamer suggestions.
Okay, well, we're not going to drop every Ranger next week. We're not going to drop Panarin. We're not going to drop Kreider and Shesterkin and Trocheck. And I would say if you're a savvy GM and you see some people dropping Gustafson going into next week, they have eight games over 2 weeks after next week, you should definitely grab him if somebody slips up and drops him, because he should be a hold while Fox is out. I'm pretty sure he has 3 points since he took the PP1 spot since Fox's injury. On the Spurgeon injury, the latest report was this morning he took the optional skate and the non-contact jersey was off. So he's probably within 2 weeks of returning, if not less. And then, you know, obviously, the Western Conference, other than Vegas, maybe Colorado, even though Colorado just got pumped by Vegas, the Western Conference is really bad to start the year. So why not the Anaheim Ducks? So go grab yourself some John Gibson and Lucas Dostal and just enjoy the ride while they're actually competent and winning games from a goaltending standpoint, because there's a whole lot of goaltending questions across the league right now. And it's making goalies, as usual in fantasy, just a fiery mess of disaster all over the place. From a streaming standpoint, from a forward standpoint heading into the weekend, a couple of teams here that go on the Friday, Sunday, but mainly the Sunday. But the one guy that's Friday, Saturday, if you can fit him in on Saturday, Matthew Nyes, left wing only with the Toronto Maple Leafs. He had 3 points yesterday on just over 16 minutes of ice time with Matthews and Marner on the top line. They play Friday, Saturday. He's only 26% owned. From a Friday, Sunday, and to Alan's point, from a Ducks standpoint, if you want Ducks to hold into next week, the only two that are within streaming standpoint ownership and hold ownership right now would be Ryan Strom and Alex Killorn, who just came back from injury. Strom is on one of the hottest lines in hockey still, somehow, with Frank Vetrano, Mason McTavish, and himself on the second line. And Killorn is on the third line with Adam Henrique and Jakob Silverberg. And Killorn actually got top power play deployment when he returned, and he's still penciled in there to be on that top unit with Michikov, McTavish, and Zegras and Terry. So I would definitely take a look at them if you're looking at a Friday, Sunday stream to help you this week and a potential hold going into next week with the Ducks having a 4-game schedule. A couple of other mentions from a Sunday standpoint and with still games remaining this week. Wyatt Johnson, 21% owned from the Dallas Stars, second line center, second power play unit. He's rolling that right now at even strength with Jamie Benn and Evgeny Dadanov. I don't really like that line, but he's, you know, get in on the kid early. He's a good streaming player for this week. If you can fit him into your lineups, he can help you on Sunday from a point standpoint. If you have faceoffs in your league as well, he would be helpful from a Sunday standpoint. And Marco Rossi, yes, he did nothing tonight. He only had 16 minutes of ice time. But with the schedule that Minnesota has this week, also playing on Sunday, you know, I would, if you did pick him up as a streamer for the week, I would hold him. I'm going to, just to see if he can maintain that deployment with Kaprizov. Yeah, so he's getting top line, top power play deployment. Ride him this week. And then if he still continues to not do anything, punt him directly into the sun because they don't play till Thursday next week in week 6. My last one, but I've seen him dropped immensely. He's also dropped over 10% in ownership, is Evan Rodriguez of the Florida Panthers. He's still on the top line with Barkov and Reinhardt. He has been bumped from power play one, which is kind of yucky for Carter Verhaeghe. And he hasn't really done anything for the past 3 games. Those are all bad things. But he still has 3 games, 2 off nights for the remainder of the week, including a Sunday game. He has a low shooting percentage currently at only 6.5%. He should see some positive regression somewhere back to the player he was a couple of weeks ago and the player he has been over the last 3 games, which is essentially doing nothing. He is also tri-eligible, so you should be able to fit him into your lineup at least for this week. I myself have him in several places, and as those listeners know, and Alan and Jay know, I'm fairly high on him. I remain that as long as he's getting this top-line deployment, but if he does do nothing for this week, he might be getting punted directly into the sun by me. But I think he's still a viable streamer just from a deployment alone standpoint. And then last but not least, he's still only 5% owned. He's been relatively hot this last couple of weeks, actually. He's skating on the second line in Columbus with the other two youngsters in Adam Fantilli and Dmitry. Oh God, I'm going to butcher this for sure. Voronkov. We'll call him Voronkov. Kirill Marchenko. He's only right wing eligible, but he doesn't look like he's on the first power play anymore, but he has been pretty hot the last week or so. Scored in their last game. His ice time has also gone up over the last couple of games, skating in that 16 to 18 minutes on ice and getting 66% power play share, even being on power play 2. So, Jay, that's our streamers. We should probably dive into a little bit of strategy talk.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I guess we'll roll quickly through. Reminder again, we mentioned before that McAvoy was on his 4-game suspension. I thought it would be Hampus Lindholm taking the PP1, but it seems like the past few games, Boston's actually been running with Kevin Shattenkirk. So
gross.
I guess fair play to whomever decided to pick up Kevin Shattenkirk and had them rolling through with a Boston power play one. That is going to end on Saturday.
Do we dare say come Sunday, Kevin Shattenkirk's going to shat his pants and go back to the third pairing? So,
anywho, just a reminder, just like you, keen savvy manager picked him up. Keen savvy manager, please do drop Kevin Shattenkirk. Now, whenever you're targeting teams, it's the idea of targeting teams who are going to play Friday, Sunday, or Friday, Saturday, or Saturday, Sunday back-to-backs. The best option is if you can get the Friday, Sunday off night. And those teams would, be Florida, Minnesota, San Jose, Anaheim. Again, it's a take whomever's available. A couple of those names. And again, look at your own league standings again. Florida, great schedule. OEL and Evan Rodriguez, same deal, right? Like these guys are getting not necessarily the production, but the deployment. And so, you know, the schedule fits it. Grab these guys, go for it, roll with it, right? These guys are all Friday, Sunday off nights. Minnesota's a little more difficult to roll with, but yeah, there's Marcus Foligno, Marco Rossi. They have tons of just go check guys, right? Like, they're go to San Jose. The whole team is there, right? Like, Tomas Hertl, like, he's 38% owned. Like, he's their one best player that inked a long-term deal. We mentioned Super Mario Ferraro again, but if you're just looking for games played, yeah, that team is going to have their entire setup there, right? Power play one, line one, D1, everyone. Anaheim, you can grab whomever just left. Everyone's going to have picked that team clean, but they also play on the Friday, Sunday. Now, in terms of the Friday, Saturday, and Saturday, Sunday back-to-backs, just look around for these guys. For the early back-to-backs of the weekend, Toronto, Buffalo, Calgary, Carolina, Philly, Washington. The other half of the back-to-back is there's Columbus, Dallas, Montreal, Vancouver. That's the Saturday and Sunday back-to-back. So again, that's Columbus, Dallas, Montreal, Vancouver. Some of those teams are great. You won't have many options to take. You're looking at power play two guys. Some of those teams are terrible, which is fantasy-wise and deployment-wise great for you because you can have your pick of the litter. Now, the final part of strategy in terms of week five weekend is what if, again, you're looking for a team to target that could potentially be usable later on for week 6-2 and that turnaround. And so let's go for the first one, right? The idea is, can you target a team that has a Friday and Sunday off night for week 5? And they play Monday. They play Monday on week 6. Do you have any of those teams? Yes, we do. So there are the New York Islanders. There's the Seattle, Colorado, and Edmonton. So Colorado, Edmonton probably have a lot of value already snapped up, but Islanders? Yeah, I've seen Pageau hanging around just doing nothing on, you know, like he's still getting like power play time and everything, line 3, I think, but power play. Seattle's got a couple of guys, you know, that are just hanging around too. That's your strategy, right? You want the off nights for week 5 weekend. And you also get a nice week 6 Monday, so you don't drop them right at the beginning of next week. You hold them for one more day, you save a little bit of ad, you get an extra game. I guess the last one, this is like deep strategy, but if it's useful to you, go for it too, which is if you want to maximize your week 6 by punting, but you don't have a Monday-Tuesday back-to-back, but we do have a Tuesday-Wednesday week 6 back-to-back. That team is Anaheim, just like Alan mentioned before. And yeah, like, so if you're really, really gunning for it, aim for the Islanders, Seattle, Colorado, Edmonton, or Anaheim. All those teams have some good early week 6 streaming viability. I'll throw back to Craig after the strategy.
All right. And I think that is our weekend week 5 preview. So now we're going to just park the van cab and each of us are going to go on a little bit of a quick fare journey, sharing some reflections on the week that was for week 4, and, you know, just our overall feelings on a couple of fantasy relevant topics, whether that's from a team perspective or a league perspective. We're just going to give some insight from the taxi squad drivers on a couple of topics. And then we'll close out the show with hot guy check-in on a few people that some of the listeners have inquired about, some of the guys that have been running hot the last couple of weeks, or even for the first month of the season. So why don't we let Alan take us around on his first quick fare? You know, don't take the cab too far, Alan. It's cold out. It's maybe even a little bit rainy where Jay is. I'm not sure, but you know, we'll hit your thoughts first on your quick fare topic, and then we'll go to Jay from there.
So I'm taking us out west. I'm saying Canada's team this season is the Vancouver fucking Canucks, man. Like, and even Craig and I were talking earlier today. Like, I watched probably about 2/3 of the Edmonton Vancouver game last night, and fuck, they just look so dominant. Like, they are clearly being force fed their Wheaties, man. Like, I hot take right now, I'd talk it for Jack Adams. Like, whatever he is, I feel like he is finally getting out of these players like what we've all thought of them for years. And right now the Canucks are the top Canadian team in the league. They're in third place with 19 points, and then the next closest team is the Jets at 17th with 12 points. Like, they're kicking ass and taking names. Is all of that sustainable? Maybe not. I know we have some craziness going on, but I mean, Demko, finally the Vezina caliber goalie we thought he could be. Right now he's 7-2 with a 1.61 goals against, 9.48 save percentage, 6 quality starts, and a 11.3 goals saved against average, which is not his highest in his career. He had a 14.93 in 21-22. Now, some of these people who could potentially come back down to earth, Quinn Hughes, I think he just set like he's like the third fastest D-man to like 20 points or something in 12 games so far. It currently sets him on 137-point pace, which, I mean, we saw what Erik Karlsson did last year, and he had 100 points. He's not hitting that. But I will say, like, something that's going to give him a boost holistically is he's shooting. Like, he even was quoted as making a concerted effort to actually shoot, and that was one of the first things I noticed in the Edmonton game was, yeah, he's taking shots. And Hronek on his side, man, like, he's killing it too. I kind of thought Detroit was showcasing him before they traded him, but it turns out he's a lot more legit than I initially thought. And Petey, man, he's pricing himself out of Vancouver. I don't know if that's his goal or not. Right now he's at 144-point pace. His shooting rate is about at his career, but a few more of them are going in. Brock Besser, I love him. A lot of people love him. Right now he's on 103-point pace. He's getting more power play time though, which is huge for him. And then he's shooting at the same level he always has in his career, but right now his conversion rate is 28.6. That is, I don't care if you're Big Koozie or anyone, you're not going to shoot at 28.6 forever. A lot of these guys will come back down, but where they are in the standings, man, like, they've got points stockpiled. Like, I absolutely, even if they fall off a cliff, like, what's the worst that could happen? They wildcard spot. But no, man, Canada's team, Vancouver Canucks, book it.
19 points in the beginning of November is insane. I did not imagine Vancouver Canucks, the Vancouver Canucks, to be that team to have 19.
I don't think any of us. I think we thought Calgary would be there.
Absolutely.
Look, Quinn Hughes has 30% of his total shots already that he took last season. He's 45
because
shots
he's trying.
Like, that is insane.
He's like Shaggy. He's like, suddenly he went from using 1% of his power to like 5.
He's like having one of those, like, I see the light moments. Wait, if I shoot the puck more, I could score more? Wait.
I've been doing this wrong the whole time.
Wait. I don't just have to set up these guys on the lower hash marks and the bumpers to score? I can shoot the puck from the point? Nobody told me that before. And now look what's happening. Now, he might be the only one with some level of sustainability from a shooting percentage out of their top, you know, five players right now with, you know, you mentioned PDs, but like Brett Besser and Miller are both north of 25% shooting percentage. PDs is around 20%. Quinn Hughes is 11. That's still pretty high for a defenseman. If it regresses to like 8 or 9, that's still going to be probably his first ever double digit goal season, you know, probably maybe pushing the 12 to 15 goal mark if he can sustain the shots on goal rate, even if the conversion rate goes down. But I stand by what I said a couple episodes ago. I was having a listener conversation on Twitter/X today about the Canucks. Miller's going to do Miller things. Yes, his conversion rate is going to come down. Petey's a 100-point player. But Besser to me, and I know, Alan, you love his lion's mane, and it looks great coming out of his bucket, and he has a high pedigree, and he's pushed the 30-goal mark a couple of times in his career. Sell high if you can on this man. Even if I'm wrong and he scores 70 to 75 points, 30 to 40 goals, you got him off waivers. If you can get a point per game player that has a little bit more position flexibility or is a position of need from him, I would absolutely do it. I think, like I said to this listener on Twitter, I said, I want it to be a true breakout season, and it certainly looks to that way, but he is on another stratosphere of hot right now. Like, we're not even talking about him as a hot guy check-in, but like he might be the hottest guy in the league in terms of total output versus what he's done last year and the year before and, you know, anything in his career. It's just a sell high guy for me. And I think the team comes down to earth a little bit in terms of their scoring rate overall, but damn, they look good and they look dominant and they look deep for the first time in a few years. And they're getting some real elite goaltending from Demko, which we saw a couple of years ago from him with a weaker team in front of him. So I think I said it earlier in the show, why not Anaheim? Shit. It looks like it's going to be Vancouver that comes out of the West as this, you know, team on fire and takes control of definitely their division. We'll see. I'm not sure when they play their first game against Vegas. That'll be a great game to see who can kind of take the hold on the who's the top team in the West, because that looks like to be a collision course at this point with Edmonton just snowballing down the standings. But Jay, what do you think? Why don't you take the rip around with the Van Cab and give us your quick segue?
I think especially, Craig, with what you mentioned about Alan's topic about Vancouver, and especially not just, oh wow, it's a great way to see how Vegas would, I guess, handle or be manhandled by Vancouver. Given also the fact that Vancouver's already played Edmonton, what, 3 games this season? And I think it's been 3 wins, right? Like, dominant.
They baned them. They broke
dominant, them. Dominant game one, real tight game two. And then, dominant game three again. All of them Vancouver wins. And my topic's real simple. It's just, we're nearing that 20-game mark, but it's now, like, where the hot takes around the contenders, pretenders, and sleepers is real juicy. Right after the 20-game mark, you kind of see them sail in. There are going to be one or two teams that, you know, pop in for the playoff spot, but most of the standings will generally stay. After the obvious two, right, Boston, Vegas, you look at them as well, right? These teams don't leak goals, right? The concern might only be Boston, bizarrely, is like they haven't even scored 40 goals, right? You'd assume by this point that would be like, you know, a given, but, you know, they're 39, real close. But it's mainly been the tandem goaltending that's really worked, right? So Vegas is the other end, right? Like, Vancouver's been scoring goals for fun, but Vegas has been keeping up, right? Like, this team looks elite. Like, Vegas looks like they really, really might be a contender for repeating, right? I know it's a long season and everything, but early days. After Boston, after Vegas, who do we have in that contending slot, right? Like, you see the Rangers seem also to do immensely well on the defensive end. Dallas and Colorado also don't seem to leak very many goals early on as well, but they're not really scoring as well. So their spots in the standings, truth be told, kind of seem interesting with the Jets and the Blues, right? Both Winnipeg and St. Louis, like, they have a good run with hot goaltenders, and I don't know, that Central Western Conference seems really interesting. I'm not sure where I place any team in the Central in terms of contender, but I think probably the most interesting ones are, where do we feel in the Pacific right now about Vancouver and Edmonton? And I mean, if Matty K was here, he'd probably have a little more of a skewed answer, but it's a good question because nobody here will honestly tell me, even now, that they think it's more likely than not that the Edmonton Oilers are going to be in a playoff spot. But the real question is, do you think it is more likely or less likely for the Canucks to be in a playoff spot or the Oilers to be in a playoff spot come April? And that will really drive how the fantasy teams are going to perform. If Vegas has scored all their goal, or not Vegas, if Vancouver scored their entire goal fountain now, and it's going to be drought season for the rest of the season for them to crash out and burn out of the playoffs, then I guess Edmonton is the real uptick team, right? Like, we got to buy low on those Edmonton players now. But if Edmonton is not going to get there, then what the heck is going to happen to all the shares of Evander Kane and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Evan Bouchard, right? Like, is it actually time for us to label and say, pretenders, sell while the iron is hot?
Look, I think Vegas is doing Vegas things. Are they sustainably hot right now? Like, they're 8-1-1 in their last 10 games. They have a differential of plus 24. So they're doing Vegas things like they did last year. I've watched a few of their games from the eye test standpoint. They're absolutely dominating possession. They're dominating in the defensive zone. They're scoring across their entire lineup, really, realistically. And Jack Eichel looks like he's Jack Eichel from Buffalo days with a better supporting cast around him. You know, Mark Stone is healthy. You know, Marchessault hasn't even really woken up yet in terms of what he was doing last year, especially to finish the year and into the playoffs. Do they come down a little bit? But I don't see how they don't sustain, you know, a top two spot in that division. And it, based on how they're playing currently, like, Vancouver's 7-2-1 in their last 10. Edmonton is the complete reverse of that, 2-7-1. You have to say Vancouver, at the very least, gets a wild card spot, even if they come back down to earth and show kinks in the armor that they've shown to start the season. Like, there's no reason to not believe they're currently a playoff team. I think out of that whole division, Edmonton probably has the best chance of rebounding and making the playoffs. The Kraken were a playoff team last year. The Kings are still a very, very good hockey team, 7-1-2 in their last 10. Like, they're not going anywhere. The question lies in is, are the Flames truly a dumpster fire? And is Anaheim in any world a happy medium to what they are now? Because if that is the case, then they may make a little bit of disruptive noise in that division and potentially be in the wild card conversation. And quite frankly, if Edmonton can't get any sort of league average goaltending over the next month, they're in big trouble. like straight up, even if they go into San Jose and win 10-4, like, they're still giving up, what, 3 to 5 goals a game? Like, that's not sustainable for a playoff team. Like, their back end and the goaltending is an absolute disaster right now. And I don't know how they fix it. And like Alan and I were talking earlier today, I don't think firing the coach is going to fix that. Not that he's not going to get fired, because he is. Like, if they win in San Jose and then get pumped by the Kraken on Saturday night, bye-bye Woodcroft. He's gone. Guaranteed. I'll put money on it right now if that's what happens. If they lose on Thursday, that he's going to be fired before he leaves the bench. Like, he'll be gone. From a fantasy standpoint, like, it's tough to nail down other than Eichel and Marchessault and Stone and maybe Pietrangelo, like, who you really want to count on from a Vegas standpoint, just based on their balance of scoring. And then Alan talked about Vancouver, maybe some unsustainability there, but damn, they look good. And they look very dominant offensively. Like, if you haven't cashed in there or you hadn't drafted one of their top end players, you're not getting them at this point, right? Even Hronek, right? He's highly owned now, and good luck getting him from the owner unless he's selling high on the likes of Hronek and Besser. And then Edmonton, I know we joked about it earlier in the show, but you hold on McDavid, you hold on Draisaitl, you hold on Hyman, you hold on Nuge, you hold on Bouchard, and you hope that they figure it out. They haven't been terrible from a fantasy perspective. Like, those guys are still relevant, obviously, especially McDavid and Draisaitl. But, like, they're certainly not at the level that they were last year, even close, right? And maybe Alan's right. Maybe McDavid's injury is still lingering a little bit. I don't know. It's hard to kind of stay there and stay in those flames. It's a scary thought process. That's why I say go knock on the door of the Edmonton Oilers, you know, top five player owners and see what can be reasonably done and accomplished to acquire those players on a buy low window. All right. Well, I guess I'll take the cab. I'll be quick. I'll go down the street and back, you know, maybe like a $2 fare or something like that. But mine's quick and simple, boys. We talked about it, especially from a Buffalo Sabres standpoint. I knew I could believe in them. I knew it. I knew that at one point they were going to be free and unleashed. And it has happened for those that have held true and faithful to the top line in Buffalo, in Tage Thompson, Alex Tuch, and Jeff Skinner. Over the last 2 weeks, they have woken up and they are scoring again. Over the last 14 days, Tage Thompson has 5 goals, 4 assists, 2 shorthanded points, 18 shots on goal, so 9 points in the last 14 days. Tuch has 3 goals, 5 assists, so 8 points in the last 14 days and 17 shots on net. And Jeff Skinner has 3 goals, 4 assists for 7 points in the last 14 days and 21 shots on net. From a cupful scoring standpoint, based on the scoring in those divisions and leagues, that puts Tage over the last 2 weeks as 8th overall in cupful scoring. Alex Tuch at 22nd in cupful scoring, and Jeff Skinner at 44th in cupful scoring. He obviously doesn't do anything from a hits and block standpoint. Surprisingly, he does have 2 blocks over the last 2 weeks. But I did hit on this, you know. That line was terrific last year, especially Tage Thompson. They were going to wake up at some point. They have woken up, especially Tage. Their time on ice still seems a little odd to me, although over the last 6 games specifically, Thompson has seen over 20 minutes time on ice, which is great. I think that's definitely part of the resurgence here for them from an offensive standpoint. Tuch has seen over 20 minutes of time on ice over the last 2 games, and Skinner has started to see that 17 to 18 minutes time on ice over the last 2 games a little bit more consistently. But these are point per game Skinner from last year, 90 plus point Thompson from last year with 47 goals, and Tuch also 35 plus goals last year. These guys were worth waiting on, and I think they just continue to get better offensively and fantasy wise moving forward. The rest of the team, you know, Casey Mittelstadt has been quite a surprise. I think overall he seems to have secured the 2C spot, at least for now, over Dylan Cousins, which makes him a little bit more viable and valuable in fantasy from that standpoint. But the peripheral scoring does need a little bit of help. But really, realistically, who's holding anybody peripherally in Buffalo from a fantasy standpoint, unless it's a deeper league. Yes, Rasmus Dahlin is doing Rasmus Dahlin things. He's almost top 50 in Cupful scoring overall. On the season, he has 10 points, 27 shots on goal, 23 hits and 21 blocks. He's been completely fine. Probably want to see a little bit of an uptake in scoring from him, but I think that will come now that the top line is humming because they all play with him on the power play. Buffalo is awake and they are scoring and they are doing Buffalo things. I think they'll be probably even better over the month of November. In terms of fantasy relevance, maybe not team relevance. I think you're going to start to see a lot of what they did last year. You know, you're going to start seeing a lot of, like, Jay, I think you spoke on them the last time we talked about the Sabres, a lot of like 5-4 games, 6-4 games, you know, those high scoring. Either they're going to be on the winning side or the losing side. But to me, that just makes what we saw last year from a fantasy standpoint, the team much more relevant and sustainable, especially for that top line in Thompson and Tuck. And another team I wanted to touch on that is also showing signs of waking up, maybe not as aggressively as Buffalo in terms of their top line, but Dallas had been off to a little bit of a sleepy start offensively. They're finally showing some signs of life, led by who we thought should be leading them offensively in Roope Hintz, Joe Pavelski, J-Rob, and I don't know how this is still happening, but Jamie Benn is again scoring again. And then you've got a little sprinkle of Matt Duchene. Wyatt Johnson has looked good. But the big one, Heiskanen, has started to wake up a little bit over the last 2 weeks. Specifically over the last week, he's still not scoring, but he went from 0 to 3, so he's alive and he has points. But over the last 14 days, to have the similar comparison to Buffalo, Roope Hintz is 23rd in Kakupful scoring, Pavelski is 54th, Jason Robertson is 56th, and Jamie Benn is 78th respectively. So again, the top lines for both teams finally waking up, more so on the Sabres side. But I think those managers in the early days of October that were like, what is happening with Tage? What is happening with Skinner? What is happening with Tuck? Do I sell high or do I sell low? Do I, you know, try to, you know, buy low? He suggested to hold on these players, and I would even suggest continuing to hold on Jason Robertson, because this is exactly what he did last year. And then he went absolutely nuclear from November onwards, slowed down at the tail end of the season, but November, December, January, he exploded. The message on these two teams, boys, is to have faith in your studs and wait for them to wake up. And I think that kind of holds very much relevance over all of our quick fair topics, is don't do something crazy when it comes to your studs on your fantasy team, especially early, because they all come back to the mean in some shape or form and will produce for you. That's why you drafted them in the top three rounds of your draft, right? They're going to come back. And thank God I didn't sell Tage Thompson in multiple leagues, but I should have bought him for Larkin in that discussion, because apparently the Detroit Red Wings are flatlining right now and I'm scared. But what do you guys think of that? Anything come to mind where we're talking stars and Sabres?
Even in our league right now, there are conversations about any team that's heavily, heavily underperforming compared to what we'd expect, right? Edmonton being a very classic example. But yeah, I think as long as their underlying metrics remain, and it doesn't have to be like crazy where you're looking at all the percentages and, you know, like crazy colored graphs, right? But even just look, like, do they shoot the puck? Do they stay out on the ice when the power play lines roll out? Like, as long as those things hold, right? Like, they're good players. They're genuinely proven players in good environments and good setups that have produced, and, you know, like, they have produced in such settings before. It'd be kind of strange to envision all that drying up just because a fresh season rolled around. So I truly believe, in terms of fantasy, we want players and teams that are heating up as the season rolls on. And I think that part is very important to remember for managers as well. We love it, obviously, when players come out hot out the gate. But it could be deceiving if you come out with breakneck speed and then kind of hold average throughout the rest of the season. You could keep a very high standing. You could keep a very high point total and make it seem and appear as if you're incredible and great. But you kind of want what Craig mentioned before, right? With J-Ro last season, where he went on a crazy torrential end to the season. That's what you want. That's when your fantasy playoffs are. That's when all those other things actually matter. So the Sabres are really heating up, I guess, at least from a fantasy perspective now. Let's see how that team performs. You almost kind of also want, I was going to say, in terms of teams that are playing well or teams that are in certain standings-wise, whereabouts are those teams relative to others? Having playoff-bound teams might not always be the best. Having bubble teams might actually be the way to go in terms of fantasy hockey success. You want the teams that are absolutely gunning it out there, trying to get 2 points week in, week out, especially when it's your, you know, near the end and it's your fantasy playoffs, right? So maybe Buffalo is a target team to trade in that regard. Maybe this team, like, they're not going to do that well in the actual standings, but they're probably going to be pouring out blood, sweat, and tears for your fantasy team come playoff time, because they're going for real NHL playoffs during that time.
Hey, I bought low on Jason Robertson last season, and it looks like it's a very viable pathway for those that believe in him doing something similar to what he did last year again this season. All right, boys. Well, let's all pile back into the van cab, and we'll do the last segment for the episode. We're going to do some hot guy check-in.
Let's do it.
So let's take a look at our first hot guy that has come up in conversations with our listeners. He continues to be hot. He scored again. But why don't you talk to us a little bit about our first Hawkeye check-in, Alan, with Jaden Schwartz from the Seattle Kraken.
Yeah, Jaden Schwartz.
Shit! I hate it when I get my Schwartz twisted.
Before tonight, he had 10 points in 12 games played, which is a 68-point pace. 8 points in his last 6, 4 on the power play. Right now, he's shooting at 14.7 versus his 12.3 career average, and then 2.8 shots a game versus 2.3. Probably maybe the only metric I see that indicates maybe this is a little room for improvement is his offensive zone starts are 42%. His career is usually anywhere from 55 to 65%. That honestly could just be from the way Seattle rolls their lines. But I'd say the biggest indicator that he's going to come back down to earth a little bit is he has an 83.3 IPP. Again, that's when a goal is scored, you were either the scorer or got an assist on it. A forwards average, I believe I said, was about 66%. So that'll come down to earth, especially on a team like Seattle that just rolls line after line after line. Looking at his career numbers, he's a career kind of 55, 65 point guy. So to see him on a 65 point pace is right in line with who he is. I would say just right now he is on a heater. So hold him if you got him, sell high if you want. But just know that he could peter off and come up with goose eggs for you for a few games in a row. But I would say maybe regresses a little, but we're seeing who Jaden Schwartz is. This is just the hotter end of that.
Yeah, and I think with all the Hawkeyes we're going to check in on tonight, he's the most sustainable based on the underlying numbers. And I think a lot to do with not just what you mentioned, Alan, is coupled with the Andre Barakowski injury. He's getting essentially Barakowski's minutes, and he's been playing so well, he is now on the top power play unit in Seattle. He was there tonight. Take that for what that is. Like you mentioned, they do roll their lines, they roll their power play units, but he's up to a 61% power play share. I think there's some sustainability here. He did score again tonight on 2 shots on goal. He played just over 17 minutes. They lost to Arizona, but dual eligibility in center left wing. He's still only 31% owned. Hey, hell, I'll be the one to admit it. I dropped Goudreau and picked this guy up in Kakupful. Yeah, I said it. And I won. I won last week by that move. And I hadn't won yet in that since week one in that league. So, yes, it can happen. Because apparently Goudreau is not valuable in Kakupful scoring when he's not scoring. So he might be the only sustainable guy that we're about to talk about. But Jay, why don't you take us through your hot guy check-in for the people out there?
Yeah, no, literally just a hot guy. Like, he's played 10 games.
Tyler Johnson? We're discussing Tyler Johnson?
So the big the big setup just is he's played his 11th game tonight. But prior to that, first five games of the season, no goals, no assists, nothing. Pretty much same deployment. And then last five games prior to tonight, he's had 4 goals, 3 assists. Like, this is Jekyll and Hyde territory. Lawson Crouse on the Arizona Coyotes. Like, didn't score tonight or get an assist, but man, my goodness, 4 goals, 3 assists in this assists in five games. Like, is Draisaitl even getting these sort of statistics over the last five games? It's wild. But yeah, he put up a goose egg tonight against Seattle. But again, it is just check up and see, man. Lawson Crouse, did you expect this? Line 2, line 3, power play 2 on the Arizona Coyotes? That's the guy that's getting over a point per game production? Just check in, see what he's up to. You know, like, if he's floating around your wire, see if you can fit him in on your schedule. You can go a heck of a lot worse than four goals, 3 assists over five games than Lawson Crouse.
Yeah, look, I think Lawson Crouse is kind of, I think we all know who he is. He seems to always run into a hot streak here a couple of times a season. He's a mainstay in the top 9 in Arizona currently, deployed on the second line with Nick Bjugstad, who's on a 7-game point streak, by the way. Matias Michelli, who seems to be more legitimate in terms of his point upside this year. So while the Arizona Coyotes are producing offensively, yeah, you want to get in as many pieces as you can of their top 6. Krause, to me, is more of a depth guy, a streaming guy, regardless of sustainability, because he could easily get bumped down the lineup as much as he could get bumped up. He's more of that, one of those versatile guys in that lineup. And to wrap Hawkeye check-in, I'm going to do a little rapid fire in terms of sustainability versus non-sustainability, because there was a bunch of names that have come up with the listeners and with us. And I'll probably save the best for last, because I think it's the most interesting, because he's kind of an unknown commodity. I think overall from these guys that I was looking at while you guys were talking about. And I guess I'll talk about Sean Monahan too, even though I don't really want to.
Monahan-a-sons, baby.
But I'll start with Travis Sinem. 10 points in 12 games. What does that put him at? Maybe like a 65-point pace. I think the last time I looked at it, it was like almost a 70-point pace. And I know Philly's kind of squandering a little bit. So that is a 68-point pace. He's not going to do that. Let's be real here. But if you get a 50 to 55-point campaign from this young man, from a defenseman you got off the waiver wire, you're going to be pretty damn happy about that. You know, right now he's only getting 30% of the power play share. Is that right? That can't be right. He's got to be getting more than that.
It's a Torts team. That could be right.
Torts is messed up, man. What is this guy
Dude,
doing?
Even in Columbus, like, you might think Seth Jones or Werenski was the power play. No, it would change from game to game.
Yeah, so really, realistically, Cam York is getting more of the power play share than he is, according to what I'm looking at right now. I'd have to dig a little bit deeper at it. So if he gets more of the power play share, he's currently shooting at only 3.8% on 26 shots on goal through 12 games. So if his power play share goes up and his shooting percent goes up even slightly, I don't think a 55 to 55 point campaign is out of the question for Travis Sinem. Out of the guys I'm going to quick fire now, him and Jaden Schwartz might be the two most sustainable players we're going to talk about in Hawkeye check-in tonight. Okay, so rapid fire. Nick Paul. Great deployment with Tampa Bay. Off to an extremely hot start. The only indicator that I want to point out to people is what he has. 7 points in 12 games. I believe, Alan, he scored again tonight, if I'm not mistaken. So he now has 9 points in 13 games, including 7 goals. Okay, all well, good and said on 25 shots. He's hitting and blocking, so he has some viability in a categories league, especially with his deployment, if he can sustain that. Second line and power play one. However, he's shooting at 20%. He is a career 9.5% shooter. So I don't think he's going to continue to score at this rate. Points will come because of the players he plays with, but there should be a regression in goals from Nick Paul. But dual eligible, good deployment. He's averaging 16.45 on ice to start the season. Certainly a depth piece I would hold. And definitely stream, because it looks like he's being dropped in and out of lineups depending on Tampa's schedule. We touched on Evan Rodriguez. I won't sit on that very long, but if he can get back power play one and hold the deployment with Barkov, we even talked about it long ago in their division preview. He's a high-end shooter, 31 shots in 11 games, but he is a terribly inefficient shooter. He's only shooting at 6.5% to start the season. He is a career 7.8% shooter. If he can maintain out line one and get back power play one and maybe even become a 10% shooter, I don't think, you know, a 60-point campaign is out of the question with maybe 25 goals, but he's never really done that. He's a fantasy unicorn being tri-eligible. Take that for what you may. I'm going to probably get real close to punting Evan Rodriguez into the sun if he still continues to flounder over this four-game week, so I won't talk too much on him. I'm going to bunch these two guys into the same thing, even though you guys have love for Sean Monahan, the Monahanissance, and Ryan O'Reilly. Ryan O'Reilly and Sean Monahan collectively, 11 games played for Sean Monahan, 6 goals, 4 assists for 10 points. Ryan O'Reilly, 11 games played, 12 games tonight, no points. So he has 7 goals, 4 assists for 11 points. Ryan O'Reilly is on a point per game pace at a astonishing 23 shots on goal through 12 games. Actually had 2 shots on goal tonight, so he would be at 25 shots on goal through 12 games. He is a astonishing 30.4% shooting percentage. Stream him when they have a good schedule. If you need help at center, pick him up, because he's getting ridiculous 20 plus minutes time on ice playing with Forsberg on their top line and top power play, but he is not going to sustain point per game pace. He has never done that in his career. The highest point output was way back in 2018-2019 with 77 points. He's only scored close to 30 goals twice in his career. The last was the same season, 2018-2019, where he scored 28 goals. And 2020-21 was his highest goals at 24 goals on that season for a total of 54 points. So sell high on Ryan O'Reilly if you can. Keep him if you need depth at center. Stream him as you may when Nashville has a prime schedule. Sean Monahan, as I said, 6 goals, 4 assists, 10 points in 11 games. Maybe a little bit more sustainable ability here than Ryan O'Reilly. Top line, top power play, if I'm not mistaken. 29 shots through the 11 games. Career 14% shooter. He's currently shooting at 20.7%. So a little bit unsustainable shooting percentage, but if it regresses to the mean at 14%, he probably still has, you know, a similar points upside to Ryan O'Reilly, 60 to 65 points. Maybe if he can sustain this output, push the 70 point threshold, the Monahanissance is alive and well, boys. He did have an assist on the power play goal tonight that Nick Suzuki scored. So he continues to produce. out of the two, I would probably hold on Monahan and cut Ryan O'Reilly. And then last but not least on the hot guy check-in, Mason McTavish. Very, I would say, unknown quantity. 43 points last year in 80 games played. He's on a just under 100-point pace right now at 13 points in 11 games, 6 goals, 7 assists, 29 shots on goal on a 20.7% shooting percentage. Career, 12.4% shooting percentage. He's averaging 16 minutes time on ice on the second line and the top power play in one of the hottest lines in hockey. This, to me, is the most interesting guy in our hot guy check-in, especially with what the Ducks are doing as a team. I certainly don't think Mason McTavish is going to score 90 goals or 90 points this season, but I think we're in the midst of a breakout season for him, and I could certainly see a world of possibilities where he breaks the 70-point threshold this season. So to cap it off, Jaden Schwartz, sustainable. Keep him, sell high. Lawson Kraus, Ryan O'Reilly, Evan Rodriguez, maybe even Nick Paul. All unsustainably hot right now. Do what you may with that information. Travis Sinheim, sustainably lukewarm, with some upside, depending on how his deployment goes and if he can increase his conversion rate and increase his shooting percentage on that. And Mason McTavish, I'm going to say it, true breakout season, ceiling 70 points. That's what I'm saying. Monahanasans, whatever you guys want to say, alive and well. I don't like it, but it's not wrong, and it looks like it could be somewhat sustainable. We will wrap the week five weekend preview here. Thank you for listening. Jay, we will park the van cab, turn off the fares. It's all love. We will see you again soon before the end of the week with the week 6 preview. Jay, myself, and Maddie K will be back with quick fares. I would imagine Raj's 6th episode of the 5-hole fantasy hockey guide will be out soon. So watch out for that on the channel. If you are not already, please subscribe, like, and give us 5 stars wherever you get your fine podcasts. Join the Discord community. TJ did release an update on our attendance, our community at large, the size of the community being just over 2,500 people in the Discord. So that's 2,500 plus now of like-minded fantasy hockey people like ourselves in a wonderful community talking all things fantasy hockey and life in general. So please join us there. If you're not already in there, get in there. And the 5-hole taxi squad will be back very soon. So good night, everybody.
Soup's cold in Edmonton, but Pickard's gonna make it so.
We'll pick you up later.
Barrett Hayton scored a goal. He is not dead yet.